Have you lost Medicaid or CHIP? At healthcare.gov, 4 out of 5 customers can find a quality
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Landy Lodge, where we have a very, very special one lined up for you today. For those of you who have been following all the FF7 Rebirth news that's been coming out, you guys know there is more than enough to discuss. We did a whole, 2-hour podcast a couple weeks ago covering a lot of the stuff that came out. This podcast is going to cover pretty much everything we didn't cover in that episode. But before we get into all that good stuff, let's first give a lot of love and a shout out to the Sages of the Lodge, the beautiful names you see up on your screen. These are the kind, generous souls who have chosen to either become YouTube channel members or donate directly to the Lodge to keep our nonsense going. So again, we give it all up to them. We love them. We thank them for their support. Also love seeing all the early birds here. We got Hyrule Falcone, Yosuke, Eric the Dude, Shadow Flare, Kevin Ribeiro, and PB and Jilly chilling over on Twitch. All right, we got quite a little crew here. And we have quite a lot to talk about, mind you. One thing we did not get to when we did our last episode, I believe it was episode 195, we didn't even make it to Calm. We barely touched on Junon Harbor. We didn't even look at the artwork yet. Again, there's just a lot of stuff that came out. And we even have some stuff from New York Comic Con to talk about today, too. So, again, lots of cool stuff. Eric the Dude dropping in here says, new Bloomberg interview with Hamaguchi drop. It's not that long, but there's some interesting tidbits if you want to see. I've already got a Hamaguchi interview pulled up. I don't know if it's just reiterating the stuff that came from that interview, but I do have a Hamaguchi interview ready to go. So we'll be able to see it there. But again, lots of cool stuff to talk about today. Again, FF7 Rebirth is one of the games I'm super excited for. When I think of like the two games I'm excited the most for in the future, I'm looking at FF7 Rebirth and Kingdom Hearts 4. Like, those are the two games I'm probably the most excited for that are coming. And a lot of it had to do, like, I was always excited for Rebirth, but ever since they laid into all the stuff they have to show, I am on the edge of my seat waiting for Liftoff. But again, without further ado, let's look into some of this Calm gameplay very quickly, and then I want to get into the artwork, and then we can talk a little bit about Junon Harbor before we get into, you know, maybe some of the interviews and stuff. But anyway, I want to take a look at this. You know, I was always very curious about Calm and how it was going to be handled in FF7 Rebirth, because the truth is, the story of Final Fantasy VII really starts in Calm. You know, it's the calm before the storm. The storm being, you know, everything that transpired in OG. But anyway, Calm is really where the story starts. And that's where Cloud goes into his story, talking about the Nibelheim flashback and everything like that. It's really where the story kicks off and where the characters, most notably Cloud, start to rope the viewer in and the player in to a little bit of what's going on behind the scenes. Now, whether they play it as subtle and soft as they did in OG, or they ramp it up even further here in Rebirth, remains to be seen. But with that said, Calm was always going to be very responsible for, lack of a better term, kicking us off on the right foot. Can you instill a sense of, like, wanderlust in the player, being at Calm, almost feel like it's a home away from home? Right, that's kind of the vibe you need to give in Calm. It's a home away from home. It's this peaceful place where the turmoil of Midgar is nowhere to really be sensed, as opposed to, you know, other places in the story, like Nibelheim, where it seems to be lurking around every corner. Calm really needs to get the player started with this sense of like a town of beginnings. And let's let this roll, because I really do believe they captured just that. Again, you're going to hear a little commentary in the background. Don't let that distract you too much. But look at this. Come right up into these stairs and look what you're greeted with. Look at what you're greeted with. And this is what I'm actually really interested in with Rebirth, is I'm a big guy on hub towns. I think hub towns are, in a lot of ways, the lifeblood of an RPG. And a great example of this to me is Final Fantasy XIII. FF13 is a game with a good story, good combat, good soundtrack, good graphics. So why is it regarded as like such a weak entry in the series? Even though I do think that line is debatable. It's because the hub towns were empty. There was no lifeblood in Cocoon or anywhere to be seen in OG FF13. And I say OG like they're remaking it. I'll take a remaster at this point. But anyway, because I did really like the game. But with that said, the hub towns are just dead. I think FF15... suffers from this in a lot of ways. FF15 does have some good hub towns, you know, some, but it's mostly just empty gas stations or like some port town. It's not a whole lot to go on. So I really feel like the immersion of an RPG comes from hub towns. And that's as true for Final Fantasy as it is Pokemon, right? Think of great example, Lavender Town in Pokemon. I just say that and the noises and the music hits your head. Right? Like, that's the sign of a good hub town. And there's something unique to that town, right? The Ghost Tower. You know, there's something unique to that town, and it makes it a memorable step on the journey. You know, again, and that's just as true in Pokemon as it is in Final Fantasy, as it is in Dragon Quest. It's things like that that make steps along the journey memorable. And when I look at how we're greeted into Calm, I'm like, they're going all in. These towns that we're going to visit, be it Cosmo Canyon, Calm, Wutai. It's all going to be just as alive and have as much lifeblood going through it as Midgar did. Because that's one thing I really liked about Remake. Even though the hub towns are very linear and a lot of that game was very, very linearly presented to us, Midgar as a hub town was amazing. The characters' dialogue changed depending on the missions you did. You know, the NPCs were having their own conversations. And they weren't just like brain-dead conversations. They were talking about like the Wutai War. And like just by standing there and paying attention to an NPC talking to like an officer, you can get a lore dump on the Shinra Midgar Wutai War. It's stuff like that that's so cool. But anyway, let's keep calm rolling here. I just love how this is... Again, I'm gonna sound like a broken record at times on this episode, but it's just alive. Look at it. First of all, you see why this game couldn't work on PS4 with the amount of NPCs in one area. That's some of the power of the PS5 and next gen you're seeing, that these hub towns can be so full, right? For those of you who, you know, are like me, you love your Square Enix games, right? Think back 10 years ago. You know, think about Birth by Sleep, the Olympus Coliseum. You would hear cheers from the crowd, but when you looked in the crowd, there was nobody sitting there. Because, you know, the hardware of the PSP and like the PS2 in that era couldn't handle that. But what we're looking at here is these towns are full. They're bustling with life. You know, I hope that we'll be able to explore a lot of buildings. That's like number two. You can't just have a good outdoor presentation. You need a lot of buildings you can go into with their own unique purposes. Midgar did that very well in Remake. I have reason to believe Rebirth is going to do that very well in all these little hub towns. Because again, it looks cool. You got people, they're on like a standing table having a few drinks. You know, I wonder if any NPCs will have like daily routines or common routines. But we'll see. But again, it's just so full, right? Like it's not even just about the people. It's all the flowers you see, plant life, the tents, things on shelves. It all just looks very full, you know, which is very encouraging because I think one of the things that made OG FF7 so memorable was that for the most part, save for a few places, every town you went to was a new adventure. And that's what they have to capture here in Rebirth if they want to do it right the second time around. And again, just from this very early look at Calm, aesthetically at the very least, it's all there. And like you see, it's not even just like, let me turn it back a little bit. Small little detail I like. It's not just like random NPCs. If you look to Cloud's right over here, you have like a whole little family. You know, you have the father who's in the suit. Looks like he's either going to work, coming home from work. Here's the mother. Daughter's got a soccer ball. You know, he just details like that where it's not, the NPCs aren't just a bunch of individuals. Some of them are in groups, right? You have this family. Maybe we'll see some couples, things like that, you know? Let's keep that rolling. See what else they come up on. Because again, and like, oh, that just looks so good, man. Again, even when you look at, I'm trying to get a good freeze frame. Like, you have these characters who are in the back sort of just dancing. You know, like, there's activity, right? It's not just stand around chat and, you know, people walking around in their routines. The activity just makes it feel so, for lack of a better term, I guess I would say fluid. Because again, you have bystanders who are watching the performance. It's not like they're just dancing. I think I saw a guy picking up flowers in the back. And again, I do love the pavement. The floors look good. That's another thing. One of the major complaints of Remake was the textures were not very good. They were good on characters, they were good on weapons, things like that, but like doors, windows, some things on buildings looked a little shanty. With the little bit that we can see here in Calm, the door textures and all those sorts of textures that got bottlenecked in Remake look really, really good. So it's cool to see they're not really cutting any corners graphically speaking, although you can still see the majority of the focus and the budget really went to those in-game models. And you see here, I don't know 100% exactly what we're looking at, but what my RPG whistleblowing starts saying is this is a hunt board. And if it's not a hunt board, it's a town board. And, you know, I wish I had subtitles on when I downloaded this video, but I do believe this is a hunt board or a town board to pick up missions. be it hunts or side quests. So again, it looks like you're going to have unique side quests to every hub town, which again helps to sort of build that town's culture, their feeling, and gives you something to remember on your, you know, when you've left that place for a later part in the journey. Take a swig for the hard-working folks over in Calm.
You can start initiating the quest, or you can do several tasks in parallel as you move forward.
Yeah, and you see, like, here's your sort of interface. Here's your quest log. So, yeah, that's exactly what that was. We picked up a quest. There it is. Boom, right on the log. Here's the map, which we're going to look at the map a little bit from time to time. I got a few clips of it. It looks huge. It looks huge. Now, it doesn't look like it's going to be the biggest map we've ever seen, but it's going to be a big map. We're going to have plenty to do and explore. Square Enix is trying to make it that FF7 Rebirth is the only game you're going to play in 2024. That's Square Enix's plan. They want you to play Rebirth all year, make a little time for the FF16 DLC, and then go right back to Rebirth. That's what they want. That's their plan for you. That's their plan for you. I got to be careful here. I think we actually looked at this on the previous episode, so I think that does it for the Calm gameplay. Yeah, because we looked at this last episode. Is there anything else? Maybe Chadley in the Towers? Yeah, we didn't quite look at that. So for those who may be familiar with, say, Legend of Zelda, Horizon Zero Dawn, it looks like the way we operate within the map and fast travel is going to work in a very similar fashion. It's going to work through Chadley, and basically we find these towers out on the map. We report them back to Chadley, and boom, he zings them right on our map, and now we're able to fast travel. So, and I will say, like, that's a very cool feature, okay? That's a very cool feature. And maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more later in the episode, but when I see the system that they're building for fast travel, Cid and the airship are not going to be in Rebirth. I'll say it right now. What's going on, Will's Word? Sage of the Lodge, ladies and gentlemen. But Cid will not be in Rebirth. That's my prediction. I could be wrong, but I don't see them giving us the airship this time. I just don't. I see a lot of the travel being handled. Vehicles, chocobos, Chadley Towers, fast travel. That's what I see this game leaning into. When it comes to the third installment, that's when I think we're going to get Cid in the airship, right? Because you have to think, in the third game, they want to introduce a new fighter, right? We've already learned that Vincent is not going to be controllable, that Vincent's going to operate the way Red did in the previous game, where it's going to be like an AI. So if Vincent isn't playable, I doubt they're going to give us a Cid that is also not playable. I think what they're setting it up for is that in the third installment, that's when you get your playable Vincent, and that's when we meet Cid. Cid's not playable, though. Cid is already confirmed to be in Rebirth, Airship Prod for Part 3. Cid is confirmed to be in Rebirth? Okay, can somebody source that? If you can get me a source, I'd like, because that's something I haven't seen. Maybe I missed that with all the stuff that came out. But yeah, Cid aside, the airship will not be coming until Part 3. I think this is primarily how we're going to be traveling. Towers, Chadley, Chocobo, buggy vehicles, stuff like that. But yeah, if Ryan, if you can find me a source that confirms Cid is in Part 3, I would appreciate that. Okay. So yeah, you go to different towers, and that sets up the map. Okay. Now, actually, let's take a little demonstration, see how it works. Again, if you're familiar with, like, Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Horizon Zero Dawn, then this system is already pretty familiar to you. But I'm curious, do we just go up and... I'm pretty sure we just go up and activate them. Yeah, and then it fires it up for you. Cid, we get airship, and the airship will transform into a... into Ark, and we fight the weapons that way. Idea? I have no idea. Hamaguchi specifically mentioned in an interview that Vincent and Cid will be in Rebirth, but will not be playable. So we'll know he'll show up, but not to play as him. Okay. I have a Hamaguchi interview lined up for today's episode. So maybe we'll see if it's lurking in there for us. Okay, so next. All right, now that that's out of the way, I want to talk about the artwork. We have not gotten to talk about the artwork yet. We didn't get to talk about it last episode, but we're talking about it now. First of all, the artwork is beautiful. I think it's stunning. The colors, the presentation, the symmetry of the three characters. Really beautiful job. I know Nomura pretty much designed it, and then some artists fleshed it out with the backgrounds and the characters. But it looks, honestly, really, really cool. I'm pretty certain the Sephiroth Cloud Zack part of it will be the cover. Will probably be the cover art or something close to it. The Sephiroth Tifa Aerith, maybe we get that on the back? I don't know. But anyway, I think this artwork is pretty peculiar. And I have a theory or two about it that I want to get into. Because I think there's something very interesting to observe here. Now, Nomura stated in an interview recently that the way he organized this artwork was no accident. That the symmetry is purposeful and the symmetry is trying to tell us something. The way Nomura puts it, and again, this is translation, so understand it's a game of telephone. Take it with a little grain of salt. The way Nomura explains it, Cloud represents one world, Sephiroth represents one world, and Zack represents another. It's sort of this idea that at each stand, you have a different world. This is what Nomura was talking about. This is how Nomura explains it. So that with Sephiroth in the center, we have the world of OG. Because that's what we've learned, right? It's all but confirmed that the Sephiroth who's in Remake and Rebirth is the Sephiroth from the original Final Fantasy VII, primarily Advent Children. Because again, we see a lot of Advent Children motifs. We see a lot of Advent Children winks and nods, especially when it comes to Sephiroth. So Sephiroth really represents this callback to the OG world. That's where he's from. He's found a way to rebuild himself in the life stream. That's in the original compilation. I forget what book it's in. It's in one of the books. I think On the Way to a Smile, the particular life stream white, life stream black chapter. Sephiroth talks about basically re-manifesting in the life stream. So again, Sephiroth is sort of a stand-in for the OG world. Cloud over on the left is the new remake world, right? That's Final Fantasy VII Remake. That's that world, that timeline, that sequence of events. So Sephiroth from the original sequence of events, Cloud from the remake sequence of events. And then when we move over to Zack, we now have a third world that was created after we severed ourselves off from Fate. Now, what this third world is, we still don't know the specifics of it. Could it be another timeline, another world line? Is it a manifestation of memories in the life stream itself? The truth is, we don't know. We still don't know what this third world is, but we know that there are three in play. Again, Sephiroth being a callback to OG, Cloud and the gang, this new sequence of events, remake, and then you have Zack, who's been pulled out of the life stream in an entirely other way. So again, Nomura confirms that that's the case for Sephiroth, Cloud, Zack, and the way they're organized in that artwork. What I find peculiar is that verbatim, shot for shot, angle for angle, he organized Sephiroth, Tifa, and Aerith the same way. I find that very peculiar. Because again, he straight up told us Sephiroth, Cloud, Zack represent three worlds coming together. Three worlds merging to one. Sephiroth mentions that in the latest trailer about this merging of worlds. You know, whether he's trying to merge Cloud and Zack's world or merge all three worlds into one, we'll see. Again, the specifics of this are still up in the air. But again, he was very deliberately told us that this is how he organized Sephiroth, Cloud, and Zack to represent each of those worlds. Now, what throws me for a loop is that he did the same thing with Sephiroth, Tifa, and Aerith. But Aerith is supposed to be from World 2. And for those who may be only listening to the audio, I've got both artworks pulled up with Sephiroth representing World 1 OG, Cloud Tifa representing World 2 Remake, and then you have Zack and Aerith representing quote-unquote World 3, which is sort of this post-fate timeline, this post-fate world line or manifestation. Now, the question becomes, why did he put Aerith there? Now, could it just be, we could be looking too far into it, and it could only be true for the Cloud Sephiroth Zack artwork and not the Tifa Sephiroth Aerith artwork? But let's consider for a minute there, let's consider for a minute that it actually means the same thing in both instances. So that Tifa and Cloud represent World 2, and that Aerith is a stand-in for this third world, this third world line, timeline, whatever you want to call it. Is it possible? Right? Because, and again, this is where things are going to get wonky. This is where things are going to get a little mind-twisty, so be ready if your mind isn't bent enough as it is. We saw at the end of intermission that Zack went to the church and Aerith wasn't there. And people seemed to be mourning Aerith or seemed to be sad at her absence. And again, they're not specific about it. They're very subtle. So we don't know for sure. But what if the Aerith of that world is either missing or somehow she's the Aerith from Remake? You know what I'm trying to say? It's going to be hard for me to kind of get out everything I'm trying to say about this just because it can be so mind-bending, numbing, twisted. You get it. Anyway, if you're here for the ride. Anyway, that said, what if the Aerith from World 3, the post-fate world, what if she's the one feeding the Aerith of World 2 information, right? Because she's missing in that world, in Zack's world. Why is she missing? You know, was she just not there at the time, or is the being Aerith actually missing in that world? Because she was pulled over into World 2. And then, remember what I believe it was Nojima told us in an interview, that in that dream sequence from Remake, where you stay at Aerith's house, and Cloud has like that vision of Aerith, and Aerith comes to him and says, Cloud, you can't fall in love with me. It's not real. And then we learned that that's like, that the Aerith that communicated with him in that dream sequence isn't the same Aerith we're trying to rescue. It's some sort of other manifestation. And for a long time, a lot of us thought that meant OG, right? That was the manifestation of the original Aerith. But what if it's the manifestation of where, actually, no, it can't be the manifestation of the post-fate Aerith because that hadn't happened yet. We hadn't severed from fate. So I withdraw that. Anyway, let's see what the chat's getting into. Let's see. Okay, what if she's the Aerith from Advent Children, Ghost Aerith? But that would be World 1, right? I just dropped my hat. That would be World 1. They lined her up with World 3 in this artwork in particular. Click for me. Okay, so I just thought the Whispers were a new element until Chapter 18. The Whispers taking forms of the Advent Children and combining into Bahamut. Bahamut's sin was an Advent Children. Made the timeline thing click for me. And then obviously the thing with Zack at the end too. Are you saying that the Whispers... Interesting take, Eric. That you're seeing the Whispers and Bahamut from Advent Children connected in some way? Maybe. I would need further convincing. Multiverse and my friends said I was crazy. No, really, they did. Yeah, you know, it's very clear they're doing something multiversal. I just think when we get to the end of the story, there's only going to be one verse, right? It's very clear there are multiple worlds in play. They've outright said it. But I think the game ends with everything consolidating into one world. Or OG Sephiroth is dealt with, and World 2 and World 3 can converge. Or something along those lines. Yes, Rebirth episode, Lands is here! What is up, Lands? How you doing, bro? It's good to see you. Okay, Maximilian Dude and other people talked a lot about that when the game first came out. If you look at the Harbinger's weapons and stances, they mimic the forms of Sephiroth remnants from Advent Children? Oh! You're talking about Laz and Kadaj and them. Yeah, I've seen that. Okay, now I know what you're talking about. The three fighters you fight during the Harbinger fight. Yeah, no. Those are connected to, like, Laz and Kadaj. Ooh, okay. Now I'm putting it together. Interesting. I'm pretty sure the Arbiter of Fate had a Bahamut Sin-esque phase. Yes, that's what we're getting on now. So that actually makes sense. So that kind of connects it all to Advent Children. Again, World 1. And again, what were the Whispers preserving? They were preserving the sequence of events from World 1. Right? It was only when we severed ourselves from that that a sort of new world was created. Because that could be something crazy too. It's also possible that OG and Remake are the same world. Because again, Final Fantasy does love to work with time loops, right? How FF1 is one big time loop. What if the world of FF7 made it to the edge, the end of existence, right? The edge of creation. What if the world of OG reached the edge of creation, the end of existence, and so it looped back to the beginning of time? And that maybe Remake is this second lap on the journey, but Sephiroth found a way to keep his memories from the first lap. So maybe there aren't three worlds. Maybe there's only two, and there's this desire to merge the two of them. I don't know. Something along those lines. Hey, John, what's going on, man? Just wanted to pop in and say hello. I'm glad you did. It's good to have you here. We're having a good time. Make no mistake. We're having a good time. All right, let's keep this going. We can come back to the artwork. I didn't want to spend too much time on it because there's a cool scene from Junon Harbor I want to play that I absolutely love that I think is setting the tone for a Rebirth in a way that I think is honestly not only fun, but, and I'll get to it when we watch it, I just think the writing is actually going to be better this time around. Remake began as a separate timeline within the OG world line right until the party entered the singularity. Yeah. And then when we come out, it changes everything ahead of us, alongside us. Okay. Kevin says, now I have that thought that the final battle is going to be Cloud OG, FF Zack new timeline, and Sephiroth from Final Fantasy teaming up to fight alongside each other against something worse than Genova. Maybe. I don't have any gripes with fighting alongside Sephiroth. I just don't want this to end with Sephiroth as a good guy. No, I want Sephiroth. Anyway, we're 30 minutes in. I could say it. I want Sephiroth to be the baddest motherfucker out there. That's what I want. You can make him tragic, right? We can flash back and you can show us that Sephiroth was a victim of circumstance, that he never stood a chance being born to Hojo and Lucrezia and him being a scientific experiment from the time he was in the womb, being injected with Genova cells, never really getting a chance to really be human. We could talk about the tragedy of Sephiroth and how he is a victim of circumstance. But goddamn, do not redeem him. Do not make him a good guy. I don't want him fighting with us in the final battle. I'm against that. Again, I'm fine with having to work with him to maybe take out a worse threat, per se. Like, maybe we fight alongside him to take out Omega. But at the end of the day, it's gotta be Cloud versus Sephiroth, right? At the end of the day, the story of FF7 is about this battle of Cloud with Sephiroth. Because Sephiroth is not just this external figure that Cloud needs to destroy. No, Sephiroth represents something internally within Cloud that he needs to overcome. It's what makes Sephiroth such a compelling villain, is he's both this external and internal villain. So again, it's got to come down to Cloud versus Sephiroth, not just externally, but internally as well. I need Sephiroth to pull a Xenos. See, something along those lines could work for all my FF14 peeps out there, which I did drop an FF14 video today. Make sure you check that out. Let's see. Okay, so worlds 2 and 3 are either dreaming worlds or dead other worlds. Yeah, to put it in Final Fantasy 7 context, maybe a world within the life stream conjured up by memory, something like that. I don't think Sephiroth is going to be redeemed. I don't think so either. His tragedy will be further highlighted, absolutely, given Ever Crisis and Crisis Core context, but his inclusion in Remake was beyond villainous. That's what I'm saying. I want him to be the baddest motherfucker Square Enix has ever made. I want to be afraid of him. I want to be scared of him. Like, I want Rebirth to end, and I want me sitting here going, how are we going to stop him? How are we going to stop him? And also, I want them to... I think it would be so cool if they could capture this, because I think Sephiroth is a really cool villain, and I like when he's on screen, and sometimes, like in a Crisis Core context, I root for him a little bit, but man, I want them to make Sephiroth such a bastard. I want him to hurt Cloud in the party so bad that when I boot up that third game, I want nothing more than to give him his comeuppance. You know, you got to ignite that fire in the player where it's like, I want to fight him. I want, you know, like, let me think, what is the best example I've ever experienced of that in a video game? Of really, really feeling like I had to take somebody out. You know, Master Xehanort in Kingdom Hearts 3 comes to mind, but I'm not sure that was the most I've ever felt it. I think the most I've ever felt it... I'm running through a list of games right now. Honestly, the most I ever felt it probably was OG FF7. Probably OG FF7. Let me peek at the gaming shelf back there, see if I can juggle my mind a little bit. Ah, you know what? You know who's another good example? Ganondorf from Twilight Princess. Ganondorf from Twilight Princess. They had me going, I need to take him out now. You know? Lamb is here. Sage of the Lodge. What's going on? Xehanort on Terracide of Birth by Sleep. Good example. Master of Masters and Union Cross, but ongoing. Yeah, that's like, they're definitely doing that with the Master of Masters and Kingdom Hearts. They're definitely doing that. But yeah, that's what I'm looking for. You know, again, you can show us that there was a human side to Sephiroth. You could show us he was a tragedy, a victim, all these things. But at the end of the day, he's the villain. At the end of the day, baby. All right. God, we're 37 minutes in. Oh, boy. Just got Marvel Spider-Man 2. Yeah, that's the hot game, baby. Hot game on the market. You let me know how that is. I think I'm going to... If I play Spider-Man 2, it's probably going to be in the distant future. I've got too much on my plate. I'm hooked on FF14 all over again. I want to give Octopath Traveler 2 a spin before the end of the year. Super Mario RPG comes out in a month. So I'm pretty loaded up. Yeah, okay, before I move on, I think Eric the Dude sums it up perfectly here. Sephiroth is a murderer and he wants to destroy the planet. No way in hell he becomes redeemed. I'm not sure he wants to destroy the planet per se. I think he just wants to subject it under Genova's... subject it under Genova's rule, right? Okay. Let's move on to the next thing I wanted to discuss. We did discuss Junon a little bit in the last episode. We discussed it a little bit, but mostly in the context of Yuffie and the boss battle, the Terror in the Deep. We didn't get to really talk about approaching Junon and the cutscene they showed us from here, which, like, I've always been excited for Rebirth. It was this cutscene in particular that's coming up that got me super excited. I will definitely go into detail about why, but let's let this roll a little bit and let's talk about Junon. Okay. Let's roll it, baby. So it's cool to see, right? Like, you know, again, we've seen a lot of open exploration in Final Fantasy VII already. It's a lot of what we talked about on the last episode. It's kind of cool to see the like linear remake paths return as you're approaching a hub town. Kind of give you the feeling you're approaching something a little bit more closed in, you know, a little bit more restricted. You know, again, it's like an even flow. It's like, you know, when you see someone's haircut and it's really... It's like really short on the bottom, but the further you go up, it gets longer. or like it's long on top and the further you go down, it gets shorter. It's like you're in the open world map. The hair is long, but the closer you get to the hub town, the more linear it looks, the more linear it gets, the shorter, you know what I'm saying? Very weird way of explaining myself, but I think you guys get it. By the way, just looking at this, the amount of stuff and treasures we're going to be able to collect and bump into looks enormous. PB and Jilly chimes in. I agree. I don't think Seppi should have a redemption. He's the perfect villain, too, on top of that. A redemption arc would change that, I think. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any redeeming him. Like, how do you redeem a guy who burnt down Nibelheim? How do you redeem that guy? How do you redeem that guy? He killed the main character's mother. There's no way to redeem that guy. I understand that, like, villains that redeem themselves, it's such a satisfying thing to watch, but you can't force it. You cannot force it. And with Sephiroth, plain and simple, it would be forcing it. Let's keep it rolling. Yeah, this is another thing I found interesting. Hold on. Wait for him to collect it again. Yeah, this item called Manifestation of the Planet's Blessing? Like, whoa. What are we going to use that for? You know what I mean? Is that going to be crafting material? Okay, this is the scene. This scene, I love. And I'm going to explain for numerous reasons why I love this scene. It's so good. So good. And it doesn't reinvent the wheel. Doesn't do anything crazy. I'm gonna quit my app and let's let it roll.
One moment. Welcome to Under Junon, our sunless oasis. My name is Rhonda.
Okay, so first of all, the NPC design, like there's two kinds of NPCs, right? You have your NPCs that just hang around the town, and then you have NPCs like Chocobo Sam, Andrea Rodea, Madame M, right? NPC design in this remake trilogy is incredible. Like Rhonda is such a basic looking character, but she looks great.
I'm the mayor and sheriff around these parts.
Mayor and sheriff. Homegirl's got her shit together. So this, let me explain to you why I love this. Okay? Because I think, and I understand why this is a common thing in video games, but I'm someone who I think the storytelling capabilities in video games, I think are incredible, right? I think it provides a level of interactivity that allows the person the story is being told to be more immersed than they would in something where they're just a bystander. Now, that all is a conversation for another day. But with that said, there is one thing in particular I have felt storytelling in games and RPGs actually struggle with. Now, for those of us that have played the original Final Fantasy VII, we have to consider that when we leave Midgar, Cloud, Tifa, Aerith, Barret have all been caught on film committing various crimes against the most powerful city and government on the planet. Again, our main cast has been caught on camera aggressing and destroying property and committing crimes against the most powerful organization, city, government, however you want to put it, on this world's whole planet. And you're telling me they could just walk around the whole planet and no one's looking for them? They could walk up into any town and nobody's going, hey, aren't those the guys Shinra's looking for? Again, I understand why in a lot of games when you have... Because, yeah, it's not just exclusive to the FF7 characters, right? Think of any RP, especially in Final Fantasy. Think of any RPG party. They're always stirring up some trouble against some established order. They're always stirring up some trouble against some powerful establishment, right? You're telling me all these characters can just free roam, consequence free? And I'm not saying you need them chased by helicopters constantly. You know, and I know the Turks would follow them, and I know Rufus would follow them, right? But there's more to Shinra's order and Shinra's rule of law than just the Turks and President Rufus. You know what I mean? Bounties like this are common. So again, the idea that we're going to be running around this world and there's a well-known bounty on our head is not only an awesome plot thread, it is immersive, it is realistic. To a degree, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I don't know. It just makes me feel like, yeah, this is what would happen. Yeah, if Cloud and the gang wanted to walk up into just any city out there, someone's going to give them a little trouble. Someone's going to go, I recognize you, folk. Now, with all that said, if this is a wanted poster, how come word hasn't gotten out that how come word hasn't gotten out that Biggs, Jesse and Wedge are dead? Think about that. Maybe Shinra really doesn't know, or maybe they're winking at something here. I don't know. Anyway, I paused the scene for a while here. Let's go. Let's see what the chat's saying. Love how they add extra context to the story that's almost never brought up when you go to new towns in OG. Good point. And that's what I'm saying. They're considered terrorists. You know? It's crazy. All right. The only people who say games aren't art have never played one. It's true. I actually think video games require more art and more artistic input than any other mediums. Because think about it. Video games, you need the visual arts. You need the audio arts. And I'm not even talking about music yet. And then you need music. And then you need, you know, people who design characters. People who design cities, landscapes, and then you're going to need, you know, as someone I've worked in computer programming in my life, there's an art to computer programming. To these people who write code, there's an art to it. You know what I'm saying? There's an art to all of these things. And I just think so many art forms bleed into one when a video game is made. The art of storytelling, you know what I mean? The art of interactivity, there's so much of it. Video games are the most immersive form of media. Absolutely, PB and Jilly. Absolutely. And you know what? Maybe it won't always be that way. Maybe there's something waiting for us around the corner that we don't know. Hasn't even been invented yet. But as of right now, that's how it is. Okay. I think I might have read this, but Will's word was said they have the media, news, internet, papers, everything. That's what I'm saying. There's no way word wouldn't get around. So this, to me, does so much for FF7's story, and it's such a little thing. For anyone out there that might be an aspiring storyteller, things like this, it's such a little thing, but it goes so far. I can't wait in 20 years when we say we're going to prefer old school gaming and it's VR. Yeah, for real. For real. Oh, boy. All right, let's let the scene go. I've been yapping on it for a while. We're almost at an hour, which is crazy, but let's let the scene keep going.
What?
Avalanche, huh?
That depends on who's asking.
A woman who could turn you in and be $100,000 richer for it.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why Rhonda is both the mayor and the sheriff. Homegirl knows how to wield her power. Moving on.
Well, you know what they say. Can't take it with you.
Also, You know, I've been pausing it a lot, so maybe the flow of dialogue is being a little taken for granted here. But I just want to say that the dialogue between the characters in the few scenes that we've seen, especially in this one, flows like just so naturally. Barrett, you know, I'm someone who I love Barrett's character. But and as bombastic and wild as he can be, I think his best moments are actually when he's calm and he's collected. Because that's a Barrett that's growing, right? Because you got to think about the first chapter of Remake. The guy couldn't control his emotions for shit. But as the story goes on, Barrett becomes a little less bombastic and more controlled. So anyway, let's let this... I wound it back a little bit. We're going to let it keep rolling.
Turn you in. And be $100,000 richer for it.
Well, you know what they say. Can't take it with you.
And Aerith to boot, huh? That's another $500,000 on top.
$500,000?
Okay. She's adorable. Aerith is adorable. Let me just say it. Okay? And that is just the fact that she's so delighted that she has such a big bounty. Like, it's not hilarious to the point I laugh out loud, but it's delightful to the point it makes me smile. And, like, good for her, man. Little flower girl from the slums is pulling in all of Avalanche combined. You gotta hand it to her. She's crushing it.
Aerith to boot, huh? That's another $500,000 on top.
$500,000?
I'll say it again. Adorable.
Down here, though, we know when to turn a blind eye.
You know what was interesting, actually? Cloud's face wasn't on the wanted poster. Cloud's the only one they don't bring up a bounty on. Huh.
Consider our lips sealed.
Sorry, but I call bullshit.
Okay, see, I love that too. Okay? Look, when someone you've never met tells you they're on your side, you need a little skepticism. You need a little skepticism. That's why I like for the Kingdom Hearts fans who are watching, in Dream Drop Distance, when Sora just blindly trusts Neku, and Neku's like, you know, you can't just go around trusting everyone you meet, dude. Anyway, keep it rolling. I'm glad that, you know, again, natural, believable dialogue. Of course Barrett wouldn't believe that she's not going to turn him in.
Well, I don't think you would if you knew even half of what my town's been through. You don't like it? Leave. But over there, there's a quiet little inn where everyone's welcome.
Now, they don't show it in this playthrough, but what I need for that scene and for this entire scenario to just be like 10 out of 10 for me is they need to go to that inn and we need to learn that Junon Harbor holds a big vendetta against Shinra. Now, there's a little bit of that in the original when you talk to the NPCs, because again, everybody in OG, you know, every town, there's someone who's got some kind of gripe with Shinra. But if they can give us a little bit of history, maybe Junon Harbor's relationship with Midgar, relationship with Shinra, you know, give the town a good reason for not wanting to turn in enemies of the state, right? Give the town a good reason for being willing to house these enemies of the state. That's all that's really missing from the scene for it to just be perfect for me. Okay. Let's see. I think that's where things end. Then it's the monster attack in the boat. That's Yuffie. And then we covered that on the first episode. Okay. So with all that said, I think I got one more thing I wanted to show you guys. Hang tight. I got something cool for you guys. Okay, where is it? Screen cap. There we go. Okay, so check this out, guys. Did you know that it was Nomura's idea to let Red 13 ride the Chocobo this way? Do we need any more evidence that Nomura is just a genius? And you know, it's very interesting. The more I read these interviews with the cast, the more I read these interviews. By the way, shout out to Audrey Itakemuchi for posting this. But the more and more I sort of read these interviews with the developers, the more and more I see what their relationships to one another are. You know, people have this idea that Nomura is like this. He's the guy at the top pulling all the strings, when really Nomura's role is to nudge things into place. He designs the characters, creates their backstories to a degree, and then when it comes to writing the story, you know, he does some storyboarding. With Kingdom Hearts, he does a lot of storyboarding, but obviously he's involved in the storyboard process. But it seems to me, when it comes to, especially when he's collaborating, he's the guy who nudges things into place. He's not the big master writer. That's Nojima. Nomura is the guy who, when Nojima and Kitase want to kill the whole FF7 party in OG and leave you with two party members, three in all, Nomura is the guy who goes, no, just Aerith. When Nojima and Kitase want to kill the whole party, Nomura is the guy who goes, no, just kill Aerith. When Kitase and Nojima want to show us everything at the end of Remake, Nomura is the guy who goes, no, just show them Zack. When Kitase and Nojima say Red 13 is going to run alongside the Chocobos, Nomura is the guy who says, nah, you put that doggy on the Chocobo. So it's just very interesting how, like, public perception of him and how he's represented in these interviews is very different. Now, again, it's all PR. It's all marketing. We don't know how much of that is even true of everything I just said. But that's the PR. That's the persona they're trying to put out there. But anyway, all that aside, let's see. Okay. I believe I had an interview. Where did I put the interview? I had the interview somewhere. Oh, right here. Okay. I got it. One second. For those who have played OG, Kate Sith's arc in this game is going to make new players go crazy. Oh, absolutely. They'll never see it coming. They will never see it coming. Okay. Let's get into it. So we got an interview with Hamaguchi that I want to get into. By the way, I was hoping that we would get to the 1 hour mark and this would be covered. So I will kind of engage with you guys in the chat as I've been doing just along the way. All right. So I'm not going to read this whole thing, but there are a few notable things I want to pick up. Okay. So one thing, when it comes to the Gold Saucer, they pretty much confirmed that pretty much all the original games are going to be recreated for Rebirth. Now, here you have Little View at the Mog House, and that they have some mini games like the card mini game. You're going to be able to play that in every town throughout the whole map. And that's really kind of their plan for some mini games. You know, not all mini games will be locked to the Gold Saucer. And they mentioned there are some mini games that you'll be able to play throughout the map. Okay. This is a big one. In the trailers, we have seen synergy team attacks. Will everybody have a team attack with every character a la Chrono Trigger, or will we be limited to a specific grouping of characters? Oh, hold on. You guys aren't on the... Let's get the chat back. There we go. So, this is huge. We talked about this in the previous episode, and we got confirmation. All characters will have synergy attacks with every character pairing. That is amazing, dude. That is something on my wish list. I always wanted but never expected to get. That is cool. That is cool. Yeah, me neither, Jill. Synergy attacks and integrate intermission were so much fun. And the idea that no matter what pairing I put together, there's going to be a synergy attack for that pairing. No matter what you do. Barret and Kate Sith, they got special moves. Yuffie and Tifa, they got special moves. You know what I'm saying? That is so cool, man. That is just... to me, it's so cool. That to me just shows you above and beyond. And you know, you see them use this word a lot. The word freedom. You know, and we've talked about this on my channel a great deal. There are a lot of big themes in FF7 that of course are being revisited in a remake. The themes of life and death. You know, the themes of being a hero. But freedom, which of course was a theme in the original, is being thrown in our faces. The whole idea, the philosophy of this game is freedom. Because think about it. And we've talked about this to a degree on this channel. But look at Remake. Nothing about Remake had anything to do with freedom. You were locked into fate with the Whispers. All of Midgar's paths were linear. You had to do pretty much everything that was done in the original. There wasn't a lot of freedom in Remake. You were glued to a path. You were glued to a hallway. You know, you're glued to the Whispers. You're glued to fate. That's why trains, by the way, you know, it does look silly in Advent Children and Remake where Cloud is like slicing through a train, but that's supposed to be symbolic. It is a little silly, but it's supposed to be symbolic because what is a train? That just sounds so stupid. A train is on the rails. It's stuck on the rails. When you put a train on the rails, there's only one way it can go. That's what Remake was all about. Right? The party was stuck on the rails. They were stuck on the rails of fate. There was only one way it could all go. But now we have sliced through that train car. We have sliced through fate. We are no longer on the rails. We have achieved, as Aerith says, boundless, terrifying freedom. And you got to think about the parallels there, right? Aerith words it as boundless, terrifying freedom. Whereas Zack, her counterpart, wants nothing more than freedom, right? What he dies fighting for his freedom, you know? And he's coming back to fight for that very freedom. So again, the theme of freedom is not just in the plot, it's in the gameplay. It is the philosophy of this entire trilogy, was to just break out and have complete freedom. Freedom for the player, freedom for the parties, freedom for the combat, freedom for the devs. When we sever ourselves off from fate at the end of Remake, that was symbolic of something much bigger than just what the characters are going through. And I love it, dude. I love it. Okay. And then we have here, Hamaguchi mentions, each character is going to have their own skill tree in which one could develop and gain new synergy actions. That'd be so cool if there's like multiple synergy actions for each pairing. For players that really like Cloud and Aerith, they can focus entirely on them or any pairings. Oh! So there's going to be a depth to the synergy, and the more you pair these characters up, the more sort of synergy abilities you're going to unlock. That is really cool. Okay. That's so cool, man. Then they kind of talk about the summons here, what summons we can expect. That they're not going to use FF16 summon system. You know what I'm saying? That they're going to kind of keep to it as it is. But this is interesting what he says here, right? I want to read this. For Rebirth, there isn't something that is incorporating summons into the main story per se. But with Remake, you may recall that the materia itself did not exactly level up. This time, however, there is a growth element that is kind of different from AP. By playing mini-games or progressing through certain content in the story, the summon materia's ability will grow. In that way, there is a sort of growth factor tied to the side content of the game. Now, to me, that's amazing. Imagine you had an Ifrit tree of side quests, a Shiva tree of side quests, a Leviathan tree of side quests, and by doing those particular side quests, you level up that materia. Now, it would be extra amazing if those side quests actually had to do with the summon too, right? If it wasn't just like, oh, you know, hunt 10 chocobos and you'll level up the Ifrit summon. It's like, no, go to this, sneak into the Shinra library and read chapter 10 of this book, which has to do with Ifrit's first appearance to the ancients, right? Stuff like that. Or like you go into this cavern and you pull up a Shiva artifact. Things like that could be so cool. I can't see green, says just wanted to pop in. What's good, my guy? Dude, I'm doing good, man. I hope you're doing good. I hope all's good on your end and that your endeavors are going well. If Knights of the Round is a summon and remake, I will spam that. My childhood tactics return. Knights of the Round won't be in Rebirth, but Knights of the Round is going to come to the final game of this trilogy. And I like Maximilian's take. He thinks that Knights of the Round will be integral to the story and will be a big part of the third game. Okay. Moving on. So this final part right here talks about dressing up the characters. Long story short, too long didn't read. It looks like you'll be able to dress up the characters in certain scenarios, but when major plot points are happening or when major parts of the story are happening, they're going to be forced into their designs, their normal clothes. But it does look like that upon beating the game and doing a new game plus, you'll be able to dress them up in all sorts of outfits. I'm sure they'll have some DLC, stuff like that. So it looks like New Game Plus is really where that's going to thrive. Alrighty. I never got Knights of the Round and OGFF7. Never could catch the Chocobos. Dude, getting Knights of the Round and OGFF7 is like the ultimate cheat code. Like, if you have Knights of the Round, you can't lose to Sephiroth. You just can't. Much better now. Your boy got a job as a special education teacher's assistant. That said, this sounds like some good stuff. Well, dude, congrats on your position. And thank you, dude. That's a very important job. I, along with many others, appreciate your labors day in and day out, making the world a better place. But yeah, all right, guys. We are at 1 hour and 7 minutes. I definitely want to keep this going at least until the hour and a half mark. I'm going to go refill my waters so you know what time it is. It's time for you all to take the good boy Kobe for a walk. I am, again, just going to refill my waters, run to the bathroom real quick, and we'll close this out. I've covered pretty much everything I wanted to cover. But if you guys have any theories, any questions, or, you know, if you guys maybe want to get back into looking at the artwork, you just let me know. But in the meantime, I'll be right back. Okay, we are back. We are back. If you are tuning in with us here, make sure you guys hit that like button, all right? Let's please that almighty algorithm. All right, so let's see what the chat's getting on about. I wonder if the PS5 will include the Rebirth game. I think when Rebirth comes out, they'll probably have like some Rebirth PS5 promotion. Something like that is bound to happen. I've been replaying OG7 and just beat Forgotten Capital, which is probably where this game is going to end. I'm dreading getting Knights of the Round. Yeah, it could be a little tedious, to say the least. Well, on Remake, I mastered the first 17 chapters on hard mode. Oh, you'll be fine. We'll be fine. Okay. Prey works out. Knights of the Round is so helpful with the secret bosses. I mean, again, it's like in OG, once you unlock Knights of the Round, like the game becomes, I don't know if I would say infinitely easier, but definitely easier than it was without Knights of the Round. That's for sure. Okay. All right. Catch up here. And we're good. All right, so let me check my notes. Again, I think I covered everything I wanted to cover. Pretty sure. Like with Calm, we covered everything. We talked about a lot of this on the first episode. Talked about Chadley's Towers. I will say that like a lot of the, you know, it is cool to see. I think I missed that the first time, but it looks like if we look in the back, right, look behind Cloud, you have the bench. If you remember from Remake, the bench is where you sit down and recover. You have the vending machine where you could buy potions and stuff like that. But then we have this machine to the right, a new part of the pit stop. I wonder if that's where you put in the plant's blessings, or maybe that's where you upgrade materia. But I found that to be pretty interesting, that we have the bench and the vending machine at the rest stops, like from the last game, but then boom, there's that other machine right there. Very cool. Lands of Masters with a resub on Twitch. He's been subscribed for 3 years. Do you realize how ridiculous that is? Lands of Masters has been supporting the Landy Lodge as a subscriber and a Sage of the Lodge 36 months. 3 freaking years. Can we give it up in the chat for Lands of Masters, please? Legit. There are few men and women in this world who support what we do here more than Lands of Masters. So thank you, bro. I love you. Thanks for the support. I look forward to seeing you soon, by the way. And yeah, thanks again. You're the best. You're the best, Lands. Nomura has confirmed that FF7 Rebirth will end after the greatest fate takes place at the Forgotten Capital. Yeah, we all kind of knew that's where we were headed. Dude, the spoilers for this game are going to be insane. Like, look out. Look out. Because the month leading into this game, the internet's going to try their best to spoil you. So be warned. M.A., what's going on? It's good to see you. Kevin Ribeiro says, Lanny, going back to the art about Cloud, Sephiroth, and Zack, I can't help but let my crazy mind go, think this is homework for what the Master of Masters is going to be doing. I mean, Square Enix stories do share a lot of elements. I think if there's anything Sephiroth and the Master of Masters have in common, it's the desire for a world merger. I think that, if you're fishing for something, that's what you should be fishing for. Tis unclear whether Chadley has even escaped Hojo's influence, even if he has gained some amount of freedom thanks to Cloud. I do think so. I think Chadley's one of the boys. I think Chadley's autonomous. I think he's on our side. 100%. Let me pull the artwork up just in case you guys want to look at it. FF7 Rebirth is getting muted as soon as we're in release month. Yeah, dude. I would definitely recommend having a system in place like that. For sure. Because, again, you know this stuff gets out a month early. You know there's people, they get their early copies. That's what sucks, man. That's what sucks is, and it's not exclusive to Square Enix, but companies like Square Enix, they send out these early copies to reviewers and creators, and inevitably, one of these bastards always, like, stabs them in the back, you know? Ends up leaking this shit out. Sometimes it's not them. There are other ways leakers can get a hold of this stuff. But you can't tell me it's not the early copy, people. Okay. Shadow Flare says, I think he is earnestly on our side, being Chadley. I just think Hojo allowed him to escape while still being able to spy on slash track Chadley. Yeah, I think there's a good chance that Chadley has fallen into Hojo's trap. But I'm not sold that he's, like, deliberately on Hojo's side. I just don't see it. FF7's new timeline seems to deviate from the original, but very interesting. Yeah, very purposefully so. And I think it's good. You know, I prefer this. I didn't want to do a retread of the OG FF7. I've played OG FF7 so many times. So many times. I don't need to retread it. The idea that there's new surprises, you know, new things lying in wait, new things for me to discover. That's the kind of stuff that gets me excited, man. That's the kind of stuff I show up for. Again, I think the idea that things are changing make Final Fantasy VII, the FF7 Remake Trilogy, infinitely more exciting. Again, infinitely more exciting. Like, without question, dude. Because, again, like, a lot of the best moments in original FF7 is the stuff that takes you by surprise. You know what I mean? It's the stuff that you don't see coming. And if you can see it coming, then it takes away that potency. You know? It takes away the potency when you remove the element of surprise. So I'm glad they did it this way. I really am. Okay. All right. But again, I think there's something to the idea that we've got three different worlds in play here. Obviously, we know Sephiroth's got a world merger in the docket. Question is how serious he is. I mean, we know how serious he is. I guess the question is what the nature of that world merger is. You know, is it like one world devours the other? Or is it really like a 50-50 blend of the two worlds, you know? Who knows? Who knows? But again, I'm real happy they did it this way. I think the original FF7 is amazing. I think it's beautiful. I think you could just leave it alone. It'll always be there. I like that they want to make something new. A new experience. So one theory I have, guys, next year will be the 50th anniversary of the first RPG, Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah, I think that was in the 70s. We might lose several people at the Forgotten Capital, kind of like Nojima wanted. I don't think so. I'll say this. Okay, major spoilers for the original coming up. 3, 2, 1, here we go. I think Zack dies at the Forgotten Capital this time. And Aerith will die in the third game. I think Zack dies at the Forgotten Capital protecting Aerith or protecting Cloud. He will die at the end of this game. And at the end of next game is when Aerith will die. Or vice versa. My point being, when it comes to Zack and Aerith, one of them dies at the end of this game. One of them dies at the end of the next game. That's what I think. Eric the Dude says, my copies of Mario Wonder and Spider-Man 2 just arrived. Gonna stay in chat until they finish downloading, but I'm enjoying the hell out of this stream. I think Aerith and Zack both die there, to be honest. You think they both die at the Forgotten Capital? Dude, I'm actually about it. I think that would drive people crazy. In the best way. I think they should do it. If that happens, my face will be a waterfall. Me too. My face is going to be a waterfall no matter who we lose. But if we lose them both at once, forget it. Forget it. Nathan Robertson says, yes, Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah, D&D. First RPG ever made. That's why, like, the Master of Masters in Kingdom Hearts, he's just the Dungeon Master. Sephiroth, he's just the Dungeon Master. Anyway. It would hurt so much they need to do it. Yeah, I mean, we're all in this to get hurt a little bit, right? There's a little bit of masochism in every FF7 fan, you know? Because we're all just signing up to have our hearts teared out again. And, like, I'm not going to lie, Square Enix failed if they don't tear our hearts out. Bottom line. If Square Enix does not tear our hearts out, they have failed at what their mission is. Because lo and behold, that's their mission, man. That's their mission. And Matt Mercer, that's why we learned, I mean, we kind of knew this. Matt Mercer is voicing Vincent. Which, that guy, man, he's getting the best gigs. He got Ganondorf. He got Vincent. Although, I've got to say, I do prefer a lot of the new cast for the FF7 gang. But I do prefer Steve Bloom as Vincent. I don't think there's any beating Steve Bloom as Vincent. Again, I'm a big Cowboy Bebop fan, so I'm a little biased. But I don't see... Again, I like a lot of the new remake cast better than the original, but I think I'm going to like Steve Bloom more than Matt Mercer. But Matt Mercer's also going to do a fantastic job. Just big shoes to fill. You know what I'm saying? Also, how did you find Yuffie in FF7 OG? I can't find her. She is in the tall grass just outside. It's very early after you leave Midgar. She's in the tall grass. God, what town is she right outside of? But anyway, she's in the tall grass. Bloom and George, hard to beat. Very hard to beat, especially Bloom. Okay. The team knows we cry if you pre-ordered FF Crisis Core. They literally sent you a box with tissues. That's funny. Eric the Dude says, Matt Mercer, in my opinion, is the best possible replacement choice for Vincent. I would probably agree with that. I think he'll do great, but Steve Bloom was amazing. Quite a passing of the torch there. And big shoes to fill. Like, I think Matt Mercer has the biggest shoes to fill. You know? Excuse me. Okay. All right, we are coming up on an hour and a half here. And I'm going to have to cut out a little bit of the beginning of this episode because a freaking, like, YouTube ad played or something. I don't know. But okay, moving on. Covered that. Okay. I don't even want to get into the whole Kate Sith debacle that happened on Twitter. If you guys want to know about that, you can watch Maximilian's video. I'm definitely not going to retread that. Crazy shit. Okay. It can be once a day. Once every 6 days. Every 7 days. I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. Anyone wanting to try an art challenge for a salute to 50 years of RPG games? Oh, that could be cool. Now I'm caught up. Okay. I think Zach will be playable at some point, Kevin. I think we do get a playable Zach. I think that's inevitable. Like, like, you don't bring Zach back and not have him playable at some point. You know what I mean? You can't keep Zach's gameplay locked into Crisis Core. You know? Gotta expand. Just went around the forest before Junon, and eventually she'll spawn. Yeah, it was Junon. Okay. Yeah, Eric the dude's right. If you just run around those forests, she'll show up. Fun fact, Neil Ross, who portrayed Mayor Domino, and Susan Silo, who portrayed the Angel of the Slums, were voice actors from the 1986 cartoon Kissy Fur? What in the hell is Kissy Fur? I'm going to look this up. Oh my God. Very weird. Not what I was expecting. All right. Line it up. Zach and Aerith, the dream team to make my eyes steam. Yeah, that's why I like the idea of them fighting in battle together and maybe dying in battle together. That could be a cool thing to pull off. Zach is definitely playable with Sephiroth playable. Everyone from part one plus Red and King Sith gives us 9 playable characters. Disappointing we don't get Vincent and Cid, but still good roster. Yeah, but again, you got to save some characters for the third game, right? You got to save some characters for the third game. So that's kind of how I see them playing that out. Kissy Fur is a cartoon about a bear cub and his dad living in a swamp and escaping the circus. It's actually a pretty funny premise. Bear cartoon from childhood, but yeah, if you can't find Yuffie, I'll just figure something out. You should be able to find her, dude. A lot of people are dropping some good advice in the chat. So you should be able to find her. I wouldn't sweat it. She's out there, man. She's out there. Alrighty. Okay. Set that up. All right. Okay. I think that's going to just about do it for us here today in the lodge. Unless some other sort of questions or comments pop up. That has happened before. Spiral me into a 20-minute rant. But I think that's where we're going to wrap up today's episode. Oh, we got a question from Lands of Masters. In your opinion, do you think the secret ending of Dirge will have a resolution? So I've heard the theory that the secret ending of Dirge is connected to what reset the timeline. But to answer your question maybe a little more broadly, I do see Genesis and Deep Ground getting involved. I see Genesis and Deep Ground getting heavily involved. Rocket Town has the forest with the highest chance of finding Yuffie. There you go. Good advice in the chat. Okay. Finding Yuppie, an FF7 story. A little bit easier to find her this time. I wonder if there's going to be a moment where the team fights Cloud, like when he goes into his whole reunion phase. Yeah. Me too. And I think there will be. I think there might be a Cloud boss battle. And maybe it's in that boss battle. You didn't hear that from me. You know, there was one other thing I did want to cover. I'm glad it just came up. The voice actor for Cloud in the New York Comic Con interview, he kind of leaked out that the Cloud's going to get transformed into something playful from the sounds of it. So I think we get to see Cloud transformed into either a Moogle, a Tonberry, or a Chocobo. Calling it now. Nomura said the Sviets won't be in Rebirth, but he didn't say they wouldn't be in Part 3. And he didn't say we wouldn't see Genesis and Angeal in Rebirth, so compilation characters are coming back. Absolutely, dude, it's the reunion!
Reunion. Reunion.
It's coming, baby. It's coming. I really want an Agents of Minerva versus Genova plotline in Rebirth. Me too, and I think they're building towards that. I really do. Please, team, give us Chocobo Cloud. He mentioned that he has to talk in, like, a funny voice. So, you know, at first when he said it, I was like, does he morph into, like, a Sephiroth clone? Does he end up, you know, that? But then he mentioned that he does, like, a playful voice. So I'm thinking it's either Moogle, Tonberry, Chocobo. It's got to be one of those three. Some people said maybe a frog, but we had Frog Cloud in Remake already. You know what I mean? Also, I got Remake spoiled. Should I still play it? Absolutely. Remake has probably my favorite combat system ever. Kingdom Hearts 3, close second. But yeah. Maybe the best ever. Tonberry Cloud with a full-size Buster Sword would be amazing. I hope they do it. I would love to see Minerva and Genova fight at all. But you see, the two of them are more ethereal, right? They're sort of they're the gods, right? And the human beings and the ancients are like the playthings of the gods, right? And like, for Genova, the clones, sometimes Sephiroth, sort of like her plaything. They're her soldiers. They're her marching ants. And for Minerva, that's Aerith. That's Cloud, you know? They fight, but they fight in the way Yu-Gi-Oh! Duelists fight. If you catch my drift. Okay. So with that said, and with Zach coming back in Rebirth, we have to see Cisne again. I am deeply saddened that we have not seen Cisne in any trailer. How dare you, Square? How dare you? I want Cisne confirmed yesterday. Yesterday. Okay. With that said, I'm going to wrap it up here. This has been a great time. I love talking FF7, especially with you guys. Plenty more FF7 in the pipeline. At least we saw Elena, the Turks' latest and greatest. Elena. So, great talking FF7. Oh, yo, whoa. We just got raided by kitties and middies with a party at 12 over on Twitch. We just got raided by kitties and middies with a party at 12 over on Twitch. Let me give you a shout out. Let me throw that shout out over on YouTube as well. Kitties, thank you. How was your stream? You were playing Persona, were you not? Yep. Persona 5 Royal. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you're following Kitties and Middies over on Twitch. She's got a YouTube channel as well. Great friend of the Lodge. Plays a lot of Persona RPGs. She's been on the Lodge numerous times. Yeah, that's right, guys. Subject X in the flesh. She's here. Burn the Lodge. Subject X is here. Fare thee well. Yes, but with that said, kitties, we are actually wrapping up the stream. So if you're on Twitch, definitely stick with us. We are going to raid. Let's raid Cynic. He's playing some Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and I do love Cynic. All right, so let's do that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for hanging out for this episode of The Lodge. Love talking FF7 with all of you. We got a Kingdom Hearts video dropping tomorrow. We got a Kingdom Hearts podcast on Sunday, which will be crazy. Crazy. And then more content coming throughout the week. But again, we're going to wrap it up there, everybody. Thank you so much for hanging out. Great seeing everybody. Thank you, kitties and middies, for the raid. Thank you, Lance, for the sub. We're wrapping it up there. You all are great. I'll see you on the next one.